Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hello, folks. This episode of the podcast is sponsored by iTalki. If you'd like to get a free lesson with iTalki, just go to teacherluke.co.uk/talk. When you get some talking time with a qualified teacher or with a native speaker who's there to talk to you, when you buy some talking time, iTalki will send you a voucher worth a free lesson. iTalki is cool because basically it's a really easy way to find one-to-one teachers or to find native speakers for conversation practice. Also, there's a large community of language learners using iTalki who you can get in touch with in order to organise language exchanges, which are free. iTalki is brilliant. It's the modern new way of speaking whatever language it is that you want to learn by using Skype. It's brilliant. You've got to try it. teacherluke.co.uk/talk or click an iTalki logo on my website. You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk. Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back to the podcast. I hope you're doing well out there in podcast land. I was thinking the other day, I've been working as an English teacher for nearly 17 years now, and I often ask my students, and I've always asked them throughout my career, what they do in English outside class. Like, for example, what they read or watch or listen to, how they continue to work on their English when I'm not there in front of them. And I've always been surprised at how people just don't do enough listening. And I've always thought that if my learners, or if learners of English in general, listened to more things in English regularly, often just for enjoyment, rather than just as some kind of obligation, if they just listened to more things in English, how this would make a big difference to their skills. A lot of my students, even the ones at B2 level or above, and I'm talking here about all the students I've met in my career, including ones from all over the world that I met when I was working in London. So I'm not just talking about my French students in Paris that I teach now, but all the students I've met. A lot of them admit that they just hardly ever listen to English outside class. Now, yes, a lot of people admittedly say that they watch films and TV shows in English with English subtitles switched on. But I don't often hear people telling me that they just listen to things like radio shows or online interviews and podcasts. Of course, there are reasons why people don't listen enough, although if you're really serious about learning a language, you'll know that these reasons are usually just excuses, really. But there are reasons, like people say that they find it hard to find the time to do plenty of listening, or they don't really understand how podcasts work, they don't know how to get them on their phones, or because they just don't really know what to listen to. That's one of the main things. Even if there is a lot of content out there, people don't quite know what to listen to. They might not know how to listen from a technical side, and they just don't take the initiative to do it. They don't go out of their way to find audio content and make listening to it part of their lifestyle, which is a pity because it can make a massive difference to your oral English. I mean, how can anyone expect to be able to operate in English as a spoken language without investing time in just listening to the language on a regular basis? Perhaps this is a symptom of learning English in a classroom, and I'm talking about people I've met over the years in classes. So maybe this is just a symptom of learning English in a classroom, because you sign up to the course, you pay your money, and then that's it. The time you spend in class is the time that you spend on putting English into your life. You've kind of like ring-fenced that time as your English time. But we know, don't we? I mean, everyone knows that to get real progress, you have to bring English into your life on a more regular basis. It's not just about going into a room, but it's about getting English into your lifestyle in a more personal way, in a way that kind of works for you long term, connecting with the language as often as possible, reading it, listening to it, using it in speaking and in writing, and dealing with the kind of English that people actually use, the living English that people actually use in conversation, rather than just reading grammar rules or doing translations or doing pre-prepared exercises with no context and none of the real sort of nitty-gritty of language being used to communicate ideas between people. So that's one of the reasons I started this podcast. I wanted learners of English to just listen to more English and real conversations with language occurring spontaneously, all given within a sort of personal context, as if you're sitting down with some friends in a cafe or a pub, almost like being there yourself, but done with learners of English in mind, the kind of content that's produced for you. So the idea has always been to encourage people to just listen to more English regularly, using content that's been designed for you, with you in mind. So that's one of the reasons why I do this podcast. I could explain it in a more complex way, talking about language acquisition theory or intake versus input or other methods and approaches to learning with audio. But to keep it simple, the principle is just listening to English being spoken and doing it regularly for longer periods of time can show real improvement as a consequence in terms of how you notice language, how you absorb vocabulary and features of pronunciation, how the language can become like a sort of voice that runs through your head, and how this can transfer into your speaking and pronunciation. So it's about connecting with the English language as a living force. Yes, I know it's starting to sound like Star Wars now, isn't it? English as a living force. But yes, so anyway, I'm going to move on. I just wanted to give you some encouragement here to keep listening and to remind you that there is method to the madness here, okay? I'm a professional, I know what I'm doing, and you can trust me, I'm an English teacher. So let me tell you about what you can hear on the podcast today as part of your English learning routine. In this episode, I'm talking to Andy Johnson again, who I expect you already know from previous episodes. If you don't know Andy, then it would be a good idea to check out his past appearances on this podcast. And you can search the episode archive on the website for the other episodes with Andy. In fact, here's a quick tip about searching the episode archive that some of you may already know, but I'm sure that many others aren't aware of. So if you've got to the episode archive, which you'll notice on my website is very long because I've got over 500 episodes, it might be difficult to search for certain things, but it's possible to use the search function, which is on any good internet browser, you know, Chrome or Safari or Firefox or even Internet Explorer. They've all got this function. If you're looking for a particular word on any website, any web page, including my episode archive, teacherluke.co.uk/archive, if you want to search for certain keywords like grammar or Andy or Amber or idioms or something, if you're looking for episodes with those things, for example, here's what you can do. And this will work on any website on the internet. So if you're using a Mac, you just press Command F, then type the word that you're looking for in the little search bar that appears. Let's say that you search for Andy because you're looking for episodes with Andy Johnson. So Command F, search for Andy, press Enter, and then all the instances of Andy on that page will be highlighted on your screen, and you can switch between them all using the arrows that will appear on your browser. So you can just go bing, 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 and find all of the episodes featuring the word Andy, and that's how you would find all those episodes in the extensive archive. So that's Mac, Command F. On a PC, so a computer that's not a Mac, it's Control F, and then you search for the word. Okay, and then all the times the word Andy is on that page will be highlighted, making it really easy to find episodes with Andy. All right, so just a little tip there for searching the episode archive. Now then, why is this episode called the M word? Any idea? Any idea why this episode is called the M word? What could that M stand for? If you've heard previous episodes with Andy, you'll know that we always seem to talk about roughly the same things every time. There are just certain themes that usually come up in my conversations with Andy. Do you know what they are? Coincidentally enough, they all begin with the letter M. So, what has Andy mentioned before on this podcast that starts with an M? Well, have a listen, because Andy has a few stories to share with you, all of them relating in some way to the letter M. So, now, without any further ado, let's get started with some more English listening practice. Andy Johnson, hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm very, very well. How are you?
I'm very, very well as well. Last time you were on this podcast, we talked a little bit about how you were preparing for the London Marathon, one of the biggest events of the year in the UK, the big London Marathon. What I'd like to know is how it was. What happened? How did it go? Did you finish? I mean, are you still running it?
I narrowly missed out on winning by just under 3 hours. it was fantastic. It was amazing. In fact, I was thinking, you know the way you give your podcast episodes like a little title every time?
Yeah.
So I thought of one for this episode.
Okay.
You could call it the M word. The M word, because I've realized that every time I'm on this podcast, I talk about three things.
Yes.
All beginning with M.
Uh-huh.
So one of them is the marathon. Mm-hmm. What are the other two, Luke?
Millennials.
Millennials is another one, yeah.
And the third one is obviously Moby.
Exactly, yeah. So I thought, you know, and I've got updates on both Millennials and Moby for you in this episode, as
Wonderful.
Well as the marathon. So there you go. So we can call this episode the M word.
Okay, fantastic. That's great. So let's start with the first M word then, which is marathon. So give us the whole story. I'd like to know the entire story, please. I want it in full detail from start to finish.
It's 5 hours long.
Great. What, the marathon or the story?
The marathon itself, I finished in the magical 4 hour 58 minute bracket, mm-hmm. which all the pros do. So I came in just under 5 hours. But in the lead up to the marathon was on Sunday, the 22nd of April.
Yeah.
And it was my birthday on the Tuesday before, and I was away. I was in Bologna for work. Have you ever been to Bologna?
No. I've eaten many foods.
Don't say it. You can't say it. I know what you're going to say. You've eaten what?
Italian food, spaghetti bolognese. It doesn't come from Bologna, does it?
Well, bolognese does, but you don't eat it with spaghetti. So
really? You're not supposed to eat it with spaghetti. Yeah.
I imagine you've got Italian listeners who will know this already, but you may even have some from Bologna. But I learned while I was out there that spaghetti bolognese is like an abomination. It's one of those things that, because you know, in you've got to choose the right pasta for your sauce, and because it's like meaty, spaghetti is the wrong thing for it. So you can't get spaghetti bolognese anywhere in Bologna.
Really?
Unfortunately, I knew this, but my colleague didn't and ordered spaghetti bolognese.
And he's dead now.
He's dead now. It's the same colleague, actually. It's the same colleague that ordered a cappuccino after his lunch. This is a cappuccino is a breakfast drink. And there was an Italian couple on the next table, and there was four of us in the group, and two of them spoke Italian. Myself, my colleague, and I didn't, but my colleague ordered a cappuccino, and the couple on the table next to them just went, "Oh, look at that! That's disgusting," in Italian.
Wonderful.
Yeah. So I was in Bologna for work, and I was there for just one night, and I really wanted to get one final training run in before the marathon. So this would have been the Wednesday morning. Mm-hmm. I didn't really want to run later than that, just so I had a bit of time to rest and everything. So I was in meetings all day, so I thought, well, I've got to go early in the morning, but I didn't know where to go running in Bologna. So before I left, I managed to find this company who do guided running tours around Bologna at 7 o'clock in the morning. And I thought, well, this is brilliant because I get to do a little bit of sightseeing as well, because Bologna is a really interesting place. It's completely underrated. I'd never really... It's not a place I would have chosen to go to, but I'd strongly recommend it.
Yeah. Well, just, so, sorry, very, very quickly, for those people who don't know, because they might be in different parts of the world, where is it? Where is it?
It's in Italy.
Okay, that's it?
Yeah, it's... Oh, God, I knew you'd ask me that now.
I can help out here, because I have this thing called Google Maps here. It's sort of in the north of Italy.
Yeah, it's south of Venice, not far from Florence, is that right?
Yeah, it's sort of in between, let's say, Florence in the south and Venice in the north, Parma to the west.
Yeah.
So let's say it's between Venice and Florence, in the north of Italy.
Yeah, and it's famous for many things. It's very famous for its food, but also it's famous for its porticos. Now, porticos are like the covered walkways that you get in many cities, and it's not the first city in the world to have these covered walkways, but I think it's got more kilometers of covered walkway than anywhere else in the world.
Mm.
So all the streets, you have these covered walkways. And it was interesting. The guide was telling me that the reason why is for money, because the people in the apartments would build out. So they sort of build on top of their balconies, and that's how they created all these porticos. So, but yeah, really, really interesting area. It's also got the world's oldest university as well.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Wow. So I booked on this running tour, and I kind of set my alarm nice and early. There's a reason I'm telling this story, because it all relates to the marathon.
Mm.
And I got out of bed, had a banana, drink of water, put my running stuff on, and then I had to run down to meet the guide in the main square in Bologna at 7 o'clock.
Yeah.
And as I was running down, it was a beautiful morning. It was like the city was just waking up. It was nice and warm, and I felt like I was the only person out. It was really nice. And as I was running down to meet him, I felt my calf muscle like pop. And it was so painful. It was really, really painful that I had to stop, and I was hobbling along.
Oh, no.
And I managed to meet the guide, and I said, look, I think I might have hurt myself. And he said, oh, no, don't worry, it's fine. We're doing a really gentle run, so you'll be okay. And I was like, okay.
He is an expert. He's the leader of this tour. I'm sure he knows all of my physiological issues.
Yeah, so we did a 90-minute run, and I was in quite a lot of pain. And it was my final training run before the marathon, considering I've been training for like over 6 months. And I thought, I can't believe that I've hurt myself.
You must have been gutted.
I was really gutted. And the point where I thought, I don't know if I can do this marathon. And I thought, no, don't be silly. Even if you have to walk it, you'll be able to do it.
Yeah.
So I flew home that night. And the next day, this was the Thursday, after work, I had to go to the Marathon Expo. Now, the Marathon Expo is like a big, you have to go there to pick up your running number and your timing chip and all those kinds of things. But also there's loads of like exhibitions and suppliers selling stuff. So I got like a compression sock for my calf to kind of help it heal.
Can I just ask you?
Yeah, sure.
Just to tell us exactly where the injury was, because you said there you had to get a compression sock for your calf, and you said earlier that when you were running in Bologna there in the morning, you felt your calf go pop. So where is the calf, and do you know exactly what had happened to it?
So what it was, the calf is the muscle on the back of your leg. So in the bottom part below the knee, the back of the leg, that's your calf muscle.
Okay.
And I've never, in all the years I've been running, I've never had any issues with my calves.
Spelling.
I've had other injuries.
You've got to say this. Sorry, go on.
C-A-L-F.
Okay. All right.
And what I'd done is I'd strained it. I had a calf strain. So I Googled, like, how long does a calf strain take to heal? And it was 4 to 12 weeks.
Oh.
And I was running a marathon in 4 days. So I was like, oh, man. So I went to the expo and I got like a compression sock. And that's like it's like a really tight sock that supports it and helps it heal quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a massage at the marathon expo.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy was like, well, I don't think it's too bad. But you know, you just see how it goes over the next couple of days.
Mm.
And as I've talked about on previous podcasts, the whole reason for me running the marathon was to raise money for charity. So there was a lot of pressure on me to make sure I was able to do this. Yeah. And the charity I was running for was the hospital where I had a lot of treatment for cancer, and it was actually the same leg.
Yeah.
Where that was where the calf had strained.
Right.
So anyway, this masseuse was giving me a sports massage, and he was asking me about my leg because it's a little bit thinner than the other one, and there's a big scar there as well.
Yeah.
So I was telling him what happened, and he said, he goes, I do a lot of work with para athletes. So para athlete, you know, the Paralympics. Mm-hmm. This is for athletes who have some kind of disability or who are not able bodied.
Yeah.
So he said, oh, yeah, so I do a lot of work with para-athletes, and I think you'd be eligible.
What?
What? Don't say this to me 3 days before I'm taking part in an able-bodied event for a start. But so he says, yeah, I think, you know, if for the cycling events, you'd be eligible. So I was like, oh, okay. I didn't realize my leg was that bad. I felt it was all right. But anyway, so that was one thing. But so... that was a Thursday, and then the Friday night, it was a real race against time to get better. Mm-hmm. So I went to see my other physio, and he said, yeah, it's going to be okay. You'll be all right. It's going to be painful, but you'll be okay.
Yeah.
And he gave me some strapping. So they put like sports tape on the back of your leg to kind of support it.
Yeah.
So I felt kind of as good as I could do going into the race.
Mm-hmm.
But then on the day itself, it was fine. It was painful for probably the first 10 kilometers, and then the pain just went away. It was quite amazing. So yeah, because it was strapped up and supported, it kind of really helped it. It kind of psychologically made it feel much stronger than it probably was.
Right. Yeah, I see.
But yeah, it was just a sharp pain. But it was. I never felt in trouble.
Good.
And because I don't know if you saw the London Marathon, but it was the other challenging thing that nobody kind of expected was that it was the hottest London Marathon ever.
Right. Yeah. There was a heat wave on that weekend.
Yeah. And, you know, which is great if you're watching a marathon, but running a marathon in that kind of heat was hard work. It was really, really hard work.
So I suppose you've got to get lots of fluids into your body because you dehydrate in high temperatures like that. I mean, I say high temperatures. I bet it wasn't compared to many other countries. It probably wasn't that hot. But.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't. I mean, it was about 26, 27 degrees.
Oh, all right. Yeah.
But then when you're running, your body kind of runs at 10 to 15 degrees warmer than that. So and the thing is, there's no shade. There's two things that make it really hot. There's no shade on the course. Everything is, there's no shadow, so you can't cool down.
Mm.
But also the heat generated by all the runners, because you're constantly running in big crowds of people, makes it feel even hotter. So it was really tough, and a lot of people struggled. A lot of people didn't finish.
Yeah, I see.
But I just decided that I was going to run really, really slowly. So I went because when I did the marathon 9 years ago, I did the first half in under 2 hours, and then the second half took me 3.5.
Yeah, you said that before. Yeah.
So this time I decided that I was just going to start off really, really slowly and try and save as much energy as I could, and it worked. It was brilliant. So I more or less did the same. I did 2 hours 20, I think, for the first half, and then 2 hours 35, 2 hours 36 for the second half, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it was pretty good, and I never really felt in any kind of trouble. My fastest kilometer was kilometer 6 and kilometer 42, so the last kilometer was my fastest.
Wow.
Joint fastest kilometer, because I managed to sort of save enough energy, and it was great. It wasn't easy, but it was great. I just really enjoyed it this time, much more than I have done in the past.
So the comparison with previous times would be, I suppose, that previously you kind of used up too much energy at the beginning, and then you probably hit a wall.
Yes, definitely.
Did you hit a wall this time?
No, I didn't.
It was
quite amazing. The only time I had kind of felt a little bit rough was there was lots of emails going out from the organizers in the days before the event about you need to take on extra water. So I kept there were extra water stations, and they said what you should do is sip and then So take a drink and then pour it over your head, mm-hmm. and all that kind of stuff. So every single drink station, I was doing that to try and stay cool and everything.
Yeah.
But it got to the point in the second half where I kept needing to stop to go to the toilet. I was drinking too much water. So then I thought, right, I'm going to stop drinking water. This was around about 18 miles. And then about 20 miles, so this would have been 32 kilometers, 33 kilometers, I began to feel a bit lightheaded. Mm. So I had to walk for a little while and just take on a lot more water and drink and, until I felt better. And then I started running again and it was fine. And yeah, I really, the last 4 miles was brilliant. The whole thing was brilliant, but the last 4 miles I felt really good. So the last 8 kilometers or so felt really, really good. Felt really strong, happy. It was amazing.
Wow.
It was amazing.
So, how much of that do you think was mental? Because maybe you expected it to be more difficult than it was because of your injury, and the injury in the days leading up to the marathon had kind of, the injury was what you were thinking about and you were concerned about it. And then when it actually came down to doing it, because your expectations were that it would be more difficult, that meant that when you actually experienced it, it was less difficult than you expected. You see what I mean?
So I see what you mean.
You know, it's all about expectations and sort of managing expectations. If you expect something to be more challenging, then the feeling, the relative challenge is maybe easier. You know, do you think that had anything to do with it? The mental process you were going through as you went into the marathon may have contributed to it being slightly easier than you had thought?
Possibly. I'd say there's two things to say about that. I think the first thing is that when you have an injury at the last minute, your mindset kind of changes to, let's not worry about a time, let's not worry about trying to, you know, beat a time, but also the heat as well.
Yeah,
that was another reason why a lot of people thought, well, let's just take it easy and just concentrate on finishing. And that kind of makes you feel a bit more relaxed in a way.
Yeah, interesting that.
But the fact that I've done the marathon before and I knew how hard the second part was made me do the first half very, very slowly.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, I think, the best part. That was the best thing I could have done, because it just made the whole experience much more enjoyable.
That's great. That's really good. Yeah. So you managed to finish, and you know, you felt like you'd fulfilled the promise of running the marathon for charity and all that stuff.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean I hit my sponsorship target on the morning of the race as well. So I had a sponsorship target, and every time somebody donated, I get a little message through on my phone. Mm. So when I was walking up to the start line, I got a message to say that I just hit my target. So that gave me a real boost as well.
Yeah.
But because it was so warm, the crowds were amazing. I think everybody in London seemed to come out to watch the marathon. And there were parts of the course where the noise of the crowd was just incredible. And because I was running with my name on my shirt, everybody was like cheering me.
Yeah.
And so people kept saying, come on, Andy, come on, Andy. And then every now and again, somebody would use my full name. And like somebody, I can't remember where I was. It was like maybe 7 or 8 miles into the race. And somebody went, come on, Andy Johnson. And I turned around and it was a guy I went to school with. And I haven't seen him for like 15 years. It was amazing. I was like, well, he just happened to be out watching the marathon and he saw me and recognized me. That was really cool.
Wow.
And then a bit further on, there were these two girls who were shouting, come on, Andy Johnson. And I had no idea who they were. No idea who they were, but I looked at them and they like cheered, and they were like, come on, Andy Johnson. And I just no idea who they were.
You didn't want to shout back and say, do you listen to Luke's English podcast?
Who are you? So all that kind of stuff. And the thing about the marathon in London is it's not all, you know, you don't go past Big Ben. Well, you do go past Big Ben, but it's not sort of, you're not constantly going past all the London landmarks. You do a lot of stuff around East London, which isn't that pretty. Mm. But there are parts of the course, like, for example, in Greenwich, that's the first kind of really busy part for crowds. And that comes about 10 kilometers in. And the crowds there were astonishing, just amazing. And then I saw my family at around about 18 kilometers, and that was great to see them.
Yeah.
And they were excited. and then coming over Tower Bridge. Tower Bridge is halfway.
Yeah.
And the crowds on the bridge were just, the noise was, you know, I was speechless. Not that I was talking while I was running, but no, I was just going, wow, this is incredible.
Yeah.
And then, of course, as you come back, or, you know, you go past the Tower of London and you go all the way along the embankment and past Big Ben, and the noise was brilliant. Really, really good. So,
oh, that's fantastic. I mean, going over Tower Bridge anyway on a normal day is pretty special.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one of my favorite places in London, because the bridge is just so, it's just so brilliant. It looks amazing. Yeah. And, you know, you get the views of the different buildings in London from there and stuff like that. But running across it with those crowds of people must just be incredible.
Mm.
Yeah. What a great experience.
Mm. Yeah, it was. It was amazing. It was really, really incredible. And the other thing as well that it always inspires me is the other runners that are on the course as well.
Yeah.
So there were more world record attempts than any other year.
Yeah.
So if a runner, so for example, the one that got a lot of coverage in the news here was there was a guy who did the race dressed as Forrest Gump. And he set a world record for the fastest marathon in fancy dress.
Right, and of course everyone was shouting, run, Forrest, run!
Exactly, yeah, exactly.
Run, Forrest, run! Run, Forrest! Run, Forrest, run!
Perfect.
There was a ran past a guy dressed as Jesus.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, he was running barefoot with a cross on his back.
No,
was quite incredible. There was a guy running in ski boots.
No, you've got to be kidding me.
I'm not joking you.
Ski boots.
And the thing is, the people who were doing, they have like a little sticker on their vest which says world record attempt.
Yeah.
And he was one. There was a woman wearing stilts.
Wait a minute, ski boots.
Ski boots.
Bloody hell, I can't even walk across the room in ski boots.
Yeah, he was doing the whole marathon in them.
Oh, that's got to be dangerous.
He was more or less walking. I mean, he was walking when I saw him, and I ran past him quite early on as well, maybe about 7 or 8 miles in. And he was just walking. He was looking quite angry.
Yeah, I mean, that would be horrible. That would just be a really, really painful and awkward experience. But that was a world record attempt. So what is
that
it? Fastest marathon wearing ski boots?
Yeah, yeah, that's it.
Oh.
That's exactly it. There was a guy dressed as a toilet. he made it like he was running, and in front of him was like the seat, mm-hmm. and then up his back he had the pipe and the thing that you flush,
yeah,
the cistern above him.
Yeah,
so he was running, and yeah, it was amazing.
A person on stilts as well.
Person on stilts, yeah.
How tall were the stilts?
I'd say maybe 2 meters tall. She was towering above everybody. So I saw her actually in the ski boots guy, more or less in the same place.
Yeah.
There were three people who were doing a world record attempt for the fastest marathon while singing the whole way. So they had like guitars, and they were like buskers. You know, like a one-man band where you've got like a drum on your back.
Yeah.
And you've got bells on your knees.
Yeah.
And he was playing. So there were three of them, and they were playing music and singing. That was quite incredible. I really admired that, because running in the heat was hard, but if you were doing any kind of fancy dress costume thing, do you remember the Wombles?
I do remember the Wombles. They were Wombles, right? I mean, they're not any kind of real animal, but the Wombles was like a TV show, I guess a kids TV show.
Yeah.
And they were like these creatures that looked a little bit like sort of rodents of some kind.
Yeah.
They lived in Wimbledon Common in London.
The Wombles of Wimbledon, yeah.
Yeah.
There was a guy dressed as a Womble. And Wombles are like really furry creatures.
Yeah.
So he had this big costume on, and it was really thick and furry.
Yeah.
And I ran past him. We just coming out of Canary Wharf, so maybe this was coming up to 30 kilometers, so quite far in.
Yeah.
And I ran past him. I looked back at him, and I could see his face through the costume, and he was white as a sheet.
Oh, God.
He looked like a ghost. He just looked really unhappy and really unwell. So, I think, you know, that kind of stuff, you really feel quite inspired by them. So even when you're doing the marathon yourself, you feel inspired by what other people are putting themselves through.
Because these people are doing this for charity, right?
Yeah.
I mean, so they're doing something difficult in order to raise money for charity. All right. So yeah, that is pretty inspiring that someone would put themselves through that level of, first of all, that level of physical challenge, and secondly, to kind of make a fool of yourself in public in that way. It's the spirit of it is great, isn't it?
And it's London on days like that is amazing. It makes you really proud of your city. It makes you really proud of where you live. And of course, lots of, I think next year over about 500,000 people have applied to run the marathon. And there's only, I think there's 40,000, 45,000 places. I think it was a really good year for the organisers, because London looked amazing in the sunshine, and the crowds were amazing. And I think there were so many world record attempts that it really inspired a lot of people to enter next year, which is great. I mean, unfortunately, most of them won't get a place because of the way it works. But it was a very good day, really good day.
Wow. That's brilliant. So are you going to do the next one?
I've entered the ballot. We'll see. I was chatting to my friend Dara, who also ran the marathon. And it was his first London marathon. He said it was amazing. And we both entered for next year. But he said to me, and I think this is true, he said, you know, I won't be that disappointed if I don't get a place. Because it is hard. It's tough. It takes up so much of your time. It takes up, you know, so much. All your free time is running, running, running. Yeah. So I'd love to do it again. If I don't do it next year, though, that will be okay. I'll be quite happy to skip a year or two, maybe wait another 10 years like I did last time.
Yeah. Okay. So since doing the marathon, which is at the end of April, so it's, I guess, about 2 or 3 weeks ago now, what have you been doing? Because you obviously have to train before a big event like that, but do you not have to kind of train down? Because isn't it unhealthy if you just stop doing exercise after you've been regularly running long distances?
You have to do something called active recovery. Mm-hmm. And active recovery is, it can be a number of things, but for me, I went cycling the next day, very slowly, but you know, I cycled to work, cycled back, and then I had a sports massage. And I've been out running a couple of times since. I took 2 weeks off the running, but I did quite a lot of cycling and walking and so on.
Yeah.
And I mean, today, what we are 3 weeks, it's almost 4 weeks since the marathon. So I was sore. I was very, very, my legs were very sore on the Monday and the Tuesday, particularly going downstairs. That was quite amusing for people to watch me go downstairs. But to be honest, by Wednesday, I was more or less back to normal by Wednesday. So it was, I felt that I was quite fortunate, really. Even though I had a small injury going in, I didn't hurt myself anymore. I managed to finish. I enjoyed it. I should say as well that I was, despite starting off slowly, the fact that I didn't hit the wall, I was half an hour faster than I was in 2009.
Really?
So that was good. And I think, you know, I could probably knock off another half an hour if it was cooler and if my leg was okay. So I would like to do it again, because I think I can get closer to 4 hours. But anyway, that's just my personal goal. I guess it's not really that important. It's more about finishing it.
Can I ask how much you raised for the charity?
Yes. Yeah, so as I said, on the morning of the race, I hit my target, which was £2,000. And then what was quite amazing is I had a lot of people sponsor me after the event. So in the week and the 2 weeks afterwards, I added another £500-600 to that.
Great. Well done.
Including some of your listeners as well. So I'd like to say thank you to them, if I may.
Please do.
Okay. Can I thank them all individually?
Absolutely.
There's not that many, so it won't take too long. And I'm not going to use their full names for privacy reasons. But I want to thank Maria, who sent me a very nice message saying best of luck on the 22nd of April. I'm sure you're going to make it, from a Lepster.
That's nice.
And she's right. I did make it.
Yeah.
And then somebody called Sandra, and she said, thanks for doing an amazing job. You're very welcome. And then I had a message from Valentin, and he said, please keep on doing it. Now, I like the message, but if it's okay with you, Valentine, I am going to stop doing it now.
What, doing the running?
Doing the marathon. I'm going to stop the marathon. I finished it now, so I'm going to stop doing it.
Do you think that's what Valentine meant when he said keep on doing it? Like, keep on running, because, you know, it could have been other things as well. Just generally, just keep on doing it. Whatever it is you're doing, just keep on doing that.
Just keep on doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then Evgeny sponsored me, didn't leave a message, but thank you very much. I'm going to pronounce this wrong. I know I am, but I think it's Gyro or Yairo, Spanish. He sponsored me as well, sent me a very nice message on Facebook. And then Christina, she said, hi, Andy, here's a donation from a Lepster. Cheers, Christina, which was very, very nice. Mm-hmm. And then the last but not least was Katarina, or Kat, as she's known from the comments section. Mm-hmm. And she sent me a very, very nice message as well. So those, just want to say thank you to those guys especially. I also had about another £100 in total that was donated anonymously. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people made donations but didn't leave names. So if any of your listeners made a donation anonymously, thank you to you as well. I really do appreciate it. It's very, very generous of you.
That's fantastic. Great. Thanks to all those listeners who did that. That's very encouraging and very generous indeed. Wonderful. Okay, so nice. I'm very happy that it all worked out well, because I knew that you had hurt your leg. And so, yeah, great. I'm very glad that it didn't prove to be a problem, and that it just went away, which is sort of magical, really, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it went away, but it came back the next day, that's for sure.
Oh, did it really?
Yeah, definitely. I felt it the next day.
Yeah. Do you think there was like some adrenaline or just the general sort of mood of the moment that kind of made you forget about it? Do you
definitely.
Think that's, yeah. How much? I mean, going back to that thing of mental stuff, how much of this do you think is mental? I mean, in terms of doing things like running or performing in sport, I was reading about Steve Redgrave, who is an Olympic champion. He won 5 gold medals in 1 Olympic Games. I think he's the guy, he may hold the Olympic record for the guy who's won more Olympic medals in his career than anyone else ever.
No, I think he's got the record for, he's won gold medals at more Olympic Games.
Okay.
Because he did something like, he did 5 Olympic Games in a row, so over 20 years, and he won gold medals at each of them. But I think people like Michael Phelps, the swimmer, have won more individual gold medals.
I see.
Because they enter more events, don't they?
Right, and he's just extraordinary, and he just wins everything he does.
Yeah, he's a fish.
He's actually a fish, yeah.
He is a fish.
Do you remember Kevin Costner in Waterworld?
Yeah.
That's Michael Phelps, isn't it?
It's like that. Did you see the Michael? Sorry, we're going off track here.
That's
did
right.
you see the Michael Phelps documentary where he raced a shark?
No.
Oh man!
Pray tell the story.
It's such a load of rubbish. So they did this thing where they were supposedly going to have a race between a great white shark and Michael Phelps. Mm-hmm. And the way it was advertised is that they were going to be in the sea at the same time, okay. and they'd be racing each other. And of course, everyone's thinking this is going to be good because a shark's a wild animal. And he might eat Michael Phelps.
Yeah, and like we don't care about how many gold medals he's won. Like we'd still really like to see him get eaten by a shark.
Well, yeah, but it's like, you know, who's going to win is less important as to whether he's going to get eaten or not.
Yeah,
because it's that kind of fascination, isn't it? That, anyway, so if you look at it on YouTube, it's such a scam, right? So they filmed him swimming in open water, and then they had a CGI shark. Next to him, and the shark won.
What a rip off.
Yeah, it was very disappointing.
But was this CGI shark sort of very realistic? You know, was it based on numerous sort of calculations that the average speed of a shark over this kind of distance?
Exactly, yeah. That's all
okay.
it was.
Okay.
So you could probably have worked out who was going to win anyway, because you know how fast he swims and you know how fast a shark swims if you looked into it yourself. But yeah, it was a very disappointing program.
Could have just done yeah.
It's worth having a look at it on YouTube, though.
Okay.
I would have a look at it for you.
Yeah. Okay. All right, then. So that's the marathon, then. So
that's the marathon.
That's the first M word. Mm-hmm. Let's say the next M word is millennials.
millennials.
And we know from previous episodes that you have become something of an expert on the subject of millennials in the English language classroom. Millennials, of course, I need to define it again just in case someone doesn't know or they've forgotten. A millennial is someone who was born roughly between 1980 and the year 2000. So it's, mm-hmm. it refers to, a generation of people or a kind of a cohort, a group of people born within a certain period. And they are also known for having grown up with digital technology. And so millennials sometimes are referred to as having certain personality traits or behavioral characteristics. Mm-hmm. And some people criticize millennials for being difficult to manage and slightly self-oriented and distracted by technology. And some managers and things don't really know how to deal with millennials in the workplace because they are, they're a bit individualistic, or that they're perceived to be buried in their mobile phones. Mm. And so, millennials are the thing that people talk about. And as English language teachers to adults, we have more and more people from this age group in our classrooms. And so, presents certain challenges because, we have to kind of adapt our teaching to meet the slightly changing requirements that this new generation of people have, right? And so you've done presentations on this subject before.
Yeah.
You did one at the IATEFL conference last year.
That's right.
Yeah, the IATEFL conference being basically the English language teaching community's big conference of the year. Right, millennials then. What do you have to tell us about millennials today?
I'm kind of at the point where I just want to stop talking about millennials now.
You've had enough, yeah.
I've had enough of these millennials.
I'm not surprised. Yeah, it's been so long. You've been talking about them for ages.
Well, I shouldn't complain because I first gave this talk in 2016. Mm-hmm. And it came out of, I talked about this when we were in Paris.
Yeah.
And it came out of research I was doing, and it came out of how we were changing our language programs here at the school.
Yeah.
And it just really struck a chord with people. And it's, I feel a bit like, because I did a workshop yesterday on how to mentor millennials in the workplace. And I'm doing another talk next week on millennials. Mm-hmm. And I guess it's like, you do stand up.
Yes.
And if you do the same routine over and over again, you begin to get a little bit bored of it, don't you?
Yeah, utterly. Yeah, you get completely jaded because you go through all these different phases. Like the first phase is when you've come up with some new material is like, thinking, oh, will anyone find this funny? Can I remember this? And then you do it and maybe it doesn't work the first time and you kind of improve it. And the next time you go up and it works and it's really exciting. And then it works again and it works again and again and it's amazing. And then you keep doing it. And then one day you're doing the routine and you don't care about it anymore, and you've lost the original spirit in which you wrote it, and the stuff you're saying just doesn't really mean anything to you anymore. And so you're still doing the routine, but you're dead behind the eyes, you're just phoning it in, and the audience is still laughing. And at some point you kind of think, why are they laughing at this shit, this bollocks? And then the next performance you become complacent and you're like, well, I'll just do that stuff that always works without even thinking about it. And then you start doing it and you're so jaded and you don't put any soul into it, and the audience suddenly stop laughing because it's just not the same thing it was before. And then there's a period where you're doing it and it's not funny anymore and it's lost its magic. And then you kind of leave it for a while and you come back to it and it brings all the magic, comes back, and it makes people laugh again. So it's really, really weird. Yeah, the relationship between the subject matter you're talking about and the way you feel about it. So yeah, it's the same thing for you then, is it, with this millennials topic?
It's getting that way. I mean, I've always, every time I do it, I try and come at it from a different angle. So yesterday, in a sense, was quite good because it was more about more focusing on how we manage them, not how we teach them.
Yeah.
And the same will be next week as well. So I'm kind of keeping it interesting for myself, but there is a part of me that's like, oh God, I just want to move on now. I want to talk about something else.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. And so did you go to IATEFL this year?
I did, and I gave a different talk, which was good.
Okay.
So, well, actually, you know what? Your listeners will, if they listen to previous episodes, will probably know what I spoke about. So, if you remember, I did a thing on self-directed learning, and many of your listeners contributed by filling in a questionnaire for me.
Yeah.
So I did a version of that. I used some of the research and talked about that. And it was good. It was good, actually. It was nice. It was basically a talk where I showed a lot of clips of online learning and how people learn online as well.
Yeah.
And I talked a little bit about you and your podcast and shared some of the research from your listeners as well.
Yeah, cool.
And yeah, it was good. It was well received. The conference was in Brighton this year.
Yeah.
So it was the opposite ends of the country. Last year was in Glasgow, up in the north in Scotland, and this time we were right on the south coast. And I was speaking in the restaurant. So the conference centre has all these different rooms, and the room I was in was called the restaurant.
Really?
It wasn't a restaurant, but you know, there was, it can be used for that way. But it had the most amazing view. It had like floor-to-ceiling windows all the way along one wall. And you could just look out to the sea. And all the way through my talk, it was a beautiful day. The day I was speaking was a really sunny, warm day, like unusually warm for April in the UK. Mm-hmm. And as I was talking, I kept, like, out of the corner of my eye, I could see there was this guy on a jet ski just dicking about. He's like, he's going, you know, zooming up and down along the coastline. And it was just bizarre. It's like all the things that you think are going to put you off during a talk in the UK in spring, it's not a guy on a jet ski.
Yeah. Were you tempted to talk about it? Because if I'd been there, I know that I wouldn't have been able to help myself. I would have had to say something about the guy on the jet ski, and then everyone would be looking at the guy on the jet ski, and I'd be kind of making a joke, and no one would laugh at it, and then I'd feel bad. So were you tempted to refer to it?
I resisted the urge. I really did, because for precisely that reason, I thought, if I point this out, that's it. I've lost them.
Yeah.
Lost them.
Yeah, but yeah,
and I only had 30 minutes for this talk, and I had a lot to get through. So it was when I was showing one of the clips, that's when I saw the guy, like, jumping up and down and bouncing across the waves, and I thought, I just hope nobody notices, but I can't say anything.
Ignore the jet ski. Just ignore the jet ski. Yeah.
Ignore the jet ski. But you know what? I meant to tell you this. Something really weird happened to me.
Yes.
At IATEFL in Brighton. Uh-huh. So. After my talk, I got chatting to somebody that I knew, and we were downstairs in the main hall of the conference.
Yeah, yeah.
And these two girls walked past. I'd say they were probably Korean. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. And they kind of stopped in their tracks when they saw me, and then like they giggled, and I'm like, and I looked behind me, and there was nobody behind me, and I thought, that's strange. So I carried on talking to my friend, and they were kind of like they were giggling to themselves and talking, and then they kind of were sort of slowly walking round and looking at me again, then sort of running off again. And I thought, what is going on? This is really, really strange. So I went outside, and I was on the phone to my wife. Actually, I was calling my wife to let her know how my talk went. And they came outside again, and they kind of walked past me, and then they came back the other way, walked past me again. And they kept looking. And then they did that really weird thing where, have you ever done this where you pretend to take a picture of somebody, but really you're taking a picture of something in the background?
Yeah, because when we were in Paris at the BSIG symposium, I think, was it BSIG? I can't remember. When we were at the conference in Paris that time and David Crystal was there.
Oh, we did it, yeah.
Yeah, you took a picture of me, but it was clearly a picture of David Crystal in the background.
And he totally knew as well.
Yeah.
He totally knew.
Yeah.
Well, they did that to me. They were like, she was taking a picture of a friend, but I was like, the camera's not even pointing at your friend. You're not even doing a good job here.
Yeah, yeah. What's going on?
I don't know. So anyway, then I was still on the phone and they walked off because I was going to sort of say, can I help you? Is everything okay? But I don't know. And I don't know. And the only thing I can think of is, well, there's two things. They could have thought.
Three things, I think.
Three things.
But go on, two things. Go on, you start with the two things.
Okay, well.
The third thing is that I thought that maybe they were thinking, oh, his eyes are very deep in his skull. His eyes are so deep in his skull. Quick, get a photo.
What a freak.
Why are his eyes so deep in his skull?
I forgot about that.
Just kidding.
Yeah. I thought, you know, they either thought that bloke's Moby.
Yeah.
Or they knew me from the podcast. I don't know. But it's the closest thing I've ever had to being famous, probably for all the wrong reasons. But
wow.
Yeah, it was very strange. So if it was you, if you're listening to this now, it was very sweet and it was very flattering, but please come and say hello next time.
Yeah, you could have just gone up to him and said, "Excuse me, are you the famous Andy Johnson from certain episodes of Luke's English podcast? Can we have a selfie with you? You know, would you like to would you like to come back to our hotel room? I mean, can we just get a selfie?
Just a selfie, that'll do.
Yeah, he's a married man.
Yes.
Either that or they thought you were Moby, but I think that you're becoming famous in your own right now.
No, I don't think so. But because it was IATEFL and they were both at the conference.
Yeah.
That's why I thought maybe they were your listeners. I don't know because I know that you have a lot of teachers listen to you. I know you have a lot of learners of English as well listen to you.
Yeah,
you just have a lot of people listen to you. Basically,
it being an English language teaching conference, the biggest English language teaching conference around, I wouldn't be surprised if someone had recognised you from the podcast. I mean, if you know, I don't know how many people at the conference would really listen to this, but if there were some, let's say, Korean teachers of English or even Korean enthusiasts for learning English who were attending, there's a good chance that they'd be listeners to the podcast. Maybe they attended just because they were fans of you. Maybe they were like, you know, in Korea there's the Andy Johnson fan club over there in South Korea. And they have weekly meetings and stuff. And maybe a couple of them were like, right, we've located Andy. He's going to be at the IATEFL conference. Let's go and take bad selfies in front of him.
It's an interesting theory, but it's a flawed one because they didn't actually come to my talk.
Oh, really?
No, they weren't in my talk.
Oh, I see. So they just sort of saw you and by coincidence. Yeah, it's a bit of a
mystery. Really like, who's that guy? And then that was the other thing, because the first time they came through, they were trying to see my badge as well. That was the other thing. They're trying to read the name on my, we all have to wear these lanyards, these badges.
Yeah.
So the first time they were like trying to get close enough to see the name on my badge. And then when they saw it, they were like giggling away. So it was very, very strange.
I think they were lepsters.
You think so?
Yeah, ninjas.
Yeah.
I've got lots of ninjas listening to this. It's exactly the sort of thing that my ninja listeners would do, is secretly sneak around in the background, like taking photos surreptitiously. And
they were rubbish ninjas.
Yeah, well,
they need to work on their ninja game.
Obviously, yeah. What they should have done is, like, you know, jumped up onto the ceiling and stuck on the ceiling. And because that's what a proper ninja would do. And proper ninja would dislocate his arms and legs and hide himself inside a suitcase or something and spy on you, or just hide in the top corner of the room, stuck to the ceiling, where no one can. And then kill you and then examine you.
So I'm thankful that they didn't kill me. I think I got off quite lightly.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you said nobody at IATEFL would listen to you. That's not true, because when I introduced, I had like a still of your podcast and your face, your mug, with your mug.
Yeah.
And I said, does anyone know who this guy? And most of the room knew exactly who you
were. What?
Yeah.
What? Really? Most of the room?
Really?
Really?
Most of the room knew who you were.
Oh, my God. They were like, yeah, well, this guy.
Yeah, no, they know. Yeah, Luke's English podcast. I tell my students, listen to that.
Wow,
you know?
Wow. That's pretty cool.
I think you should, I've said this to you before, Luke, but you should talk at IATEFL.
I'd like to talk at IATEFL. The only thing is, I just, you know, I can't think of what I'd like to talk about. I'll tell you what I would like to talk about. I'd like to go up and say, so ninjas, they're kind of funny, aren't they? You don't know where they are. Oh, but that's not really appropriate for the IATEFL conference.
You could come do stand up like you did in Paris that time.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, no, I would genuinely, or joking aside, I would like to do a talk at IATEFL. But, you know, when you're doing something like that, I always feel like I would need to tell the audience something really useful. And what I tend to do is, you know, on my podcast, I talk to learners of English. And I don't know, what do you think? What could I tell the teaching community?
Well, you know what? It's interesting because you've got what they call imposter syndrome. Have you heard about imposter syndrome?
Oh, I have heard about imposter. I've talked about imposter syndrome on the podcast. Where,
oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah, that's where feel like you don't really deserve to be in a certain situation.
Or you feel that you've got nothing. You feel that what you're saying is nothing new. And I think we all, anyone who speaks publicly or anyone who puts themselves across as any kind of expert has this to a certain extent. I was speaking about this with my colleague yesterday because the millennials talk I was doing yesterday was not to teaching professionals. It was to HR managers and HR directors. Mm-hmm. And so it was a completely different audience. And I was a bit concerned. I was a bit nervous going in doing it, but actually it was fine. And it was really well received. So it's amazing what you can often feel that you're like, there's no way I should be doing this. There's no, like, for example, the, couple of days after the marathon, so this was just 2-3 weeks ago, mm-hmm. we were at the company I work for was at a trade show mm-hmm. for CIPD, which is continuous professional development.
Yeah.
And we were the only like English language or language school provider there. It was all sorts of different training. Yeah. But we gave a talk on in the conference, and it was the biggest audience I've ever spoken in front of.
Yeah.
And we were talking about how you, all the different things you need to consider if you're going to do any kind of e-learning. So it wasn't even really about language. It was about all the different factors at play when you're putting in an e-learning program within a company. Mm-hmm. And my colleague and I, who gave the talk, we were both like, oh, no one's going to believe us. But, you know, because we'd never spoken about that topic in front of that kind of audience before. But it was honestly, it was professionally the best thing I've done all year. It was really? It was so amazing, the response that we got, and the amount of nodding and people coming up afterwards saying what you said was really good. I never thought of it that way before. So yeah, it was wonderful.
It's fantastic. How many people were there? Do you know?
Well, it was at Olympia, which is a big exhibition hall, yeah. And they had You have all of these people who are exhibiting on the exhibition floor, and then you had what they called learning zones, and each learning zone had seats for about 200 people. Mm-hmm. And every seat was full, yeah. But then there was people standing at the back all around the room.
Yeah.
So I'd say 250 people, I guess.
That's good, isn't it? It's when it goes well, that is a good feeling when you've got that many people and you feel the room is enjoying what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty special. Yeah, great. I'm glad
it went
well.
Was good. So I think, you know, there's a number of ways in that you could do it for IATEFL, and we can have another conversation about this if you want, but there's all sorts you could talk about.
When is the next IATEFL conference? Do you know?
It's April.
It's always in April.
Always
April. Yeah.
And next year it's in Liverpool.
Liverpool? I love Liverpool.
I like Liverpool. The first time I went to IATEFL was in Liverpool, and it's a great city.
I used to live there. Yeah.
Did you?
Yeah, I went to university there. 4 years I spent in Liverpool, including 1 year just working in the local HMV on Church Street. And I came face to face with the locals every day. That was an experience, let me tell you.
Did you understand anything that they said?
I did actually. It was fine. But it was pretty funny just meeting all the locals. It was pretty funny. I was exhausted as well because I was working there full time, and then I was playing music in a band in the evenings and not really looking after myself very well, not eating properly and, you know, not getting enough sleep and stuff. And so I would often be pretty knackered while working at the HMV. And I remember there was one time when this guy was asking me to find, because, you know, this is back in the days before the internet, or before the internet really became so well used, and people would come into the shop and ask you if you had something in stock. You know, instead of just buying it online, they'd come in and ask you, and then I'd use this old computer system to search for it. And, you know, this guy was like asking me for all these sort of jazz records and stuff, and I was all tired. And he said, "Are you all right, mate? You seem tired. I tell you what, mate, you want some of that cocaine, you do." And I was like, "All right, steady on, Jesus. All right, mate. Yeah, you want some of that cocaine?" I was like, "I'm not sure I do, actually." And we'd get all the kids would come in after school, and they'd be really, really sort of like difficult to deal with because, like, local Scouse kids, like scallywags.
They've got a reputation, haven't they?
They've got a reputation. They're all right, but they can be pretty cheeky, and they'd be coming in. They'd come in large numbers, and they'd swarm around you. Probably stealing, you know, shoplifting a little bit. And so you'd have to keep your eye on them, because we had all of these, we had lots of things on the counter, you know, like various things, including Pokemon cards.
Right.
And so they would often target the Pokemon cards. And so a couple of them would come up to you to distract you, and they'd be like, "Hey, mate, have you got any Pokemon cards? Got any Pokemon cards?" But meanwhile, you know full well that they have identified the location of the Pokemon cards. And in fact, some of them might even be, you know, taking them from the packet.
So, and the thing is as well,
you got any more Pokemon cards, mate?
So you would have been, what, 19, 20 at this time?
Yeah, in that region, yeah. Yeah.
And the thing is, it's so difficult at that age to really care. Because, you know, you're like, you're working for HMV. You're just doing it to get a bit of money. And when people like that come in and start causing the trouble, you're like, oh, man, I really don't want to have to deal with this. Yeah. It's above my pay grade.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing, yeah. Ken Dodd used to come in.
Did he now?
Yeah, Ken Dodd used to come in sometimes and walk around. By the way, listeners, Ken Dodd is a very, very famous old comedian from the UK. He died this year. Sadly,
that's right.
But Ken Dodd was an absolute legend of comedy, and he'd been around since the early days, like even the 60s, 50s. He was around sort of on TV with the Beatles and stuff in the 60s on one occasion, and just an absolute legend of comedy. And so he used to come in. He was quite a funny character walking around.
But you know, Ken Dodd was my dad's favourite comedian.
Yeah. Yeah.
He loved him.
Well, he was wonderful. Yeah. All right. So, okay, marathon, millennials, third M.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that one. Yeah, Moby.
All right, so?
There's been another one.
Another Moby sighting in the area.
Another Moby sighting, well, yeah.
Or alleged Moby sighting.
Alleged Moby sighting. It's not a long story, but when I was going to the Marathon Expo to pick up my race number.
Yeah.
So this place in London called the XL, it's a huge conference centre. It's another big conference centre like Olympia, but it's on the other side of London, in East London. And there's a really long walk from the DLR, the railway station, to the conference centre itself. You have to kind of go up all these steps and down all these little tunnels. I was just walking in, and there was this bunch of school kids coming the other way.
Yeah.
And they're like, "Moby! Moby! Hi, Moby!" And I thought, I'm not doing this now. I'm completely ignoring him. And they just didn't stop shouting it. "Moby! Moby, why haven't you talked to us, Moby? Moby!" And it was like, oh.
Oh, dear.
And that's it. So, it's still ongoing. And I think it's going to be... What was amazing, though, I was thinking, surely you're too young to know who Moby is.
Yeah.
Because he's not, you know, he's not really...
He's from the 90s.
He's from the 90s. I mean, I think I'm probably going to be cursed with this for the rest of my life, because he's a little bit older than me, but we're a similar age. So it's always going to be that way.
Well, it's like you said before, it's the cross you bear.
It's the cross I bear. That's right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Andy, thank you for telling us your stories again. That's always nice. And
thank you, mate.
And just enjoy it. You can now relax with a nice feeling that you did the marathon, it went well, and you raised money for charity. That must be a good feeling. It must be very sort of rewarding.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it definitely is. It's and again, thank you to everybody who supported me. It was very touching. Thank you very, very, very much.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, and if I don't speak to you before, Luke, have a very happy birthday.
Thank you.
And also, best of luck with the podcast awards. I imagine that by the time this goes out, you may well know the result.
Yeah, I think so, because the ceremony's on Saturday. And I've got an episode or two that need to go up before this one goes up.
Okay.
So, yeah, by the time I publish this, I'll know whether or not I've actually won anything.
Good luck.
Thanks.
Good luck. Let's see. Fingers crossed.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Fingers firmly crossed. I've no idea what will happen, but we'll see.
All right.
Yeah. Okay. Cheers, mate.
Cheers, Luke. Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye-bye. So that was Andy there telling us a few stories. I hope you enjoyed listening to us in conversation. I would just like to say at the end of this episode, thank you very much if you sent me a message recently to wish me a happy birthday. It was my birthday recently, Thanks for your messages. I received messages in my email inbox, on Facebook, on Twitter, and in the comments section of the website. So thank you. That is very nice of you. If you didn't realise it was my birthday, and you would still like to wish me a happy birthday, you're welcome to do it. But what do you do? What do you write if you're saying happy birthday to someone, but it's late? What do you write? Well, you can write happy belated birthday. Happy belated birthday. That's what you write when you're late, wishing someone a happy birthday. Belated, B-E-L-A-T-E-D. Belated means basically happening later than expected or happening later than when something was supposed to happen. For example, we can give someone a belated apology. That's when you apologize to someone, but the apology is coming a bit late. Or it could be a belated attempt to do something. That's when you try to do something, but it's probably too late. For example, he made a belated attempt to apologize, but it didn't help. So he tried to apologize, but it was too late. A belated attempt to apologize, or he gave a belated apology. Also, we get things like belated recognition. For example, when an artist receives belated recognition for their work, it could be that they get some recognition, but it's too late. Maybe they're dead by the time they get the recognition they deserve. That has happened to a few artists in the past. Was it Vincent van Gogh? Yes, and I say Vincent van Gogh in British English. Normally it's Van Gogh. In other countries it's like Van Gogh, Van Gogh. The artist, the painter, Vincent van Gogh, didn't he receive belated recognition for his work? I think that for large parts of his career, he just didn't really have much success, and no one really noticed how great he was until perhaps after he died. It wasn't until after he died that he received most of the recognition and all the praise, and his work suddenly became incredibly valuable. So he received, you could say, belated recognition for his work. So anyway, belated. Happy belated birthday, you might write, if you want to. Also, we have similar words like overdue. So overdue is a synonym of belated, but we use overdue, so that's O-V-E-R-D-U-E, one word. We use that for more work-related things, like a report or a payment that comes in too late. For example, an overdue payment. But anyway, thank you very much for the birthday wishes. I had a lovely day with my wife and daughter, and I received some very nice gifts, and it was great. Thank you. I had cake. It was delicious. Yum, yum, yum. So, not much time here. There's so many things to talk about. I'd love to just keep talking to you for ages, but I won't. I'll just try and say a few things briefly here at the end, just a little sort of post-episode ramble here at the end. So I managed to get to the cinema to see Avengers Infinity War. I'm mentioning this because a couple of people have asked me to comment on it, and I've spoken at length before about Marvel films. So a couple of people wrote to me saying, hey, have you seen Infinity War? What did you think? Well, I did get to the cinema to see Avengers Infinity War, the latest in the Avengers film franchise, all part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I did get to see it. In a nutshell, I really enjoyed it. In fact, I was kind of blown away by it. I don't know how they managed to include so many characters with their own complex storylines into one single film and actually make it work. So I really enjoyed it. It made me laugh. I enjoyed the character development of the bad guy, Thanos. And I found that weirdly, we sort of understand where he's coming from in terms of his motivations. Even though he's a classic comic book bad guy, we sort of understand why he's doing it. And I think that helped the film. It helped the plot a lot. I enjoyed the performances of the actors. Some of the weird moments, there were some kind of slightly odd, almost surreal moments in the film, which I liked. I liked the action sequences, and I was quite stunned by the ending. I'm not giving away any spoilers, but let's say it didn't end in the way that these kinds of action movies usually end, and I can't wait for the next part of the story to come out next year, so I can just see what happens next, because it was quite stunning at the end. It was like, what? No, what? I was quite surprised and surprisingly quite emotional as well in some scenes. So anyway, I can't wait for the next one. Avengers Infinity War, that was my little mini review. I also saw Deadpool 2, which made me laugh a lot, mainly just comedy. Deadpool, it made me laugh, especially in the way that it makes fun of typical tropes of superhero action films, the kinds of cliches that you always get in superhero films. A lot of them are mocked in Deadpool 2. I really enjoyed Deadpool 2. I thought it was very funny and extremely violent. Not that that's necessarily a good thing, but it's really the humour that did it for me. And the character of Deadpool is kind of an interesting one. The way he breaks the fourth wall, you know, he talks directly to the audience sometimes, which is, you know, enjoyable. I'm yet to see the new Star Wars film. Yes, there is another new Star Wars film out, just in case you didn't realise. There is a new Star Wars film. Yeah, I know, it was only a few months ago that the previous new Star Wars film was out, but here we go with another one. And this one is called Solo, and it's a kind of origins story of Han Solo. Now, I haven't seen it yet, but I haven't mentioned it, I think, before. I wasn't expecting much from Solo, because honestly, how can it be possible to make a film about such a beloved character as Han Solo without Harrison Ford that doesn't disappoint everyone? It's bound to be a disappointment, isn't it, really? Because Han Solo, you can't really separate Han Solo from Harrison Ford. I mean, how can anyone possibly play Han Solo and sort of match the charm, the charisma, and just the general, I don't know what it is that Harrison Ford has. I mean, it's not that he's a brilliant actor. It's more that he just has this unique sort of charm, the star power. How can anyone play Han Solo without the star power of Harrison Ford? I don't know how it could work, but I haven't seen it yet. And actually looking at the trailer, it looks pretty good. It looks like a sort of smaller story than the usual Star Wars films, more like a kind of gangster film or like a bank robbery film or something, but set in the Star Wars universe. I have the impression that the critics don't like it, but I've been avoiding the reviews. Just the little glimpses of commentary I've seen about it don't seem to be great. Also, I've seen that the film hasn't taken as much money as they expected or hoped. I don't know if that's a sign of the film being good or not, but it suggests that the film is a failure, maybe a flop, which is kind of what I was expecting anyway. I knew that there were lots of problems in the production process of the film, that they fired the original directors of the film. They did lots of rewriting. They did reshoots. The actor had to have lots of assistance to help him get the performance right, you know. So there were lots of sort of bits of news that suggested that it was a troubled production, which usually means that the final result isn't very satisfying. But anyway, I'm going to go and see it when I can, and hopefully I'll enjoy it. But anyway, that's enough talking here at the end. Thank you so much for listening to the podcast as usual. If you listen to my podcast on iTunes or you use the Apple Podcasts app, then you might see, if you check through the archive of episodes in your podcast app, you might see that you don't have access to the back catalogue of episodes. You'll see that some of the older episodes are missing. That's because they're not all available in the Apple Podcasts app. So if you want to get all of the episodes, the entire back catalogue, in an app on your phone, with also lots of bonus content, then get the Luke's English Podcast app. It's available free for Apple and Android phones from the App Store. All of the back catalogue, lots of bonus stuff, including videos and all kinds of other things. Check it out, Luke's English Podcast app in the App Store. That's it. Speak to you again on the podcast soon, but for now, goodbye. Bye, 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 bye. Thanks for listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.